Reconstruction was a time period from around 1865 to 1877, and it was an effort to reintegrate Southern states back into the Union, as well as to find 4 million newly freed African Americans place in American society. And if this is the type of content that you enjoy, you can find more at onemichistory.com. If you'd like to support the channel, you can do so at my Patreon page or my Buy Me Coffee in the description below. Also, give us 5 stars on Apple Podcasts. But without further ado, let's get started.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
From the outset of the Civil War, slavery was tied to the fight over states' rights, with the differences being between supporters of slavery and proponents of free labor, dividing the country politically, economically, culturally, as well as ideology. Free labor was the idea that a person had the right to work for themselves or determine whether or not they wanted to work for someone else. From the beginning, Abraham Lincoln did not want to make the abolishment of slavery a goal for the Union war effort. He feared that it would drive border states still loyal to the Union into the Confederacy and anger conservative Northerners. By the summer of 1862, however, Lincoln realized that he had no choice. Thus, the Emancipation Proclamation was born, and it freed more than 4 million enslaved people in states still in the Confederacy after January 1, 1863. However, the proclamation left more than 700,000 African Americans still in bondage in Delaware, Kentucky, Maryland, Missouri, as well as Union-occupied areas in Louisiana, Tennessee, and Virginia. The Emancipation Proclamation changed the Civil War and the United States. It ensured that a Union victory would mean a complete revolution in the South. However, it was still very unclear what that revolution would look like. In the fall of 1863, Lincoln began planning for the reunification of the United States, and over the next several years, Lincoln considered ideas about how to deal with Southern states involved in the rebellion. Under Lincoln's policy, men highly placed in the Confederate Army or government would not immediately regain their right to vote. Most Southern men would not be punished if they promised to support the United States government and accepted the end of slavery. Members of Congress viewing Lincoln's plan felt that it was too nice to the Confederates and did not go far enough to protect newly freed people. Congress countered Lincoln's policies with the Wade-Davis Bill, which temporarily put former Confederate states under military control. This bill had the president appointing governors to oversee this transition of former Confederate states, and under these governors, majority of the voting population had to swear their loyalty, after which each state was required to pass a new state constitution that outlawed slavery. Like Lincoln's plan, high-ranking officials in the Confederate government or military men would not be able to vote, and only men who swore that they did not support the Confederacy would be able to vote for delegates who would then write the state's new constitution. Additionally, the Wade-Davis Bill provided free people with limited civil rights. Lincoln refused to sign the Wade-Davis Bill, so it never became law. In April 14, 1865, during the performance of Our American Cousin at Forest Theater, any plans Lincoln had for Reconstruction would fall on Andrew Johnson. The assassination of Abraham Lincoln propelled the Vice President Andrew Johnson into the executive office in 1865. Johnson was a firm believer in states' rights and an unapologetic racist. In Johnson's eyes, the Southern states had never given up their rights to govern themselves, and the federal government had no right to determine voter requirements. Johnson showed very little concern over the status of free people, believing that they needed to be controlled by whites. He offered the South quick restoration into the Union, and his Reconstruction plan required provisional Southern governments to void ordinance of secession, pay off their war debts, ratify the 13th Amendment. All other matters, Southern state governments were given free rein, rebuild themselves as they saw fit. For former slave owners, they were being crushed by the South's economic downturn. Before the war, most Southern planters' wealth was dependent on their slaves and their land. So after the war, the federal government declared that Confederate dollars were worthless and the planters lost their slaves as compensation. Given these financial issues, planters needed a docile, willing, or forced labor force to work for low wages. Employees were convinced that African Americans would not work without being forced to by stringent vagrancy laws, strict labor contracts, or the threat of violence. Former slave owners wanted to rule over their employees with the same authority they had done their former slaves. They were willing to accept the end of slavery, but they would not accept a world in which African Americans had the same rights as whites. As a result, employers would react violently to any challenge to their dominance, and as one Mississippi paper would summarize the attitude of most former slave owners, the true station of a Negro is that of a servant. The wants and state of our country demands that he stay servant. For free people, they were reluctant to work for whites because at the time they were expecting to receive land from the federal government. Free people argued that they deserved land because they had never been paid for their labor as slaves. But however, President Johnson would return all land that had been confiscated by the Union Army and distributed to formerly enslaved people by the military or the Freedmen's Bureau would revert back to its pre-war owners. Agents of the Freedmen's Bureau therefore traveled to the South, explaining that the government was not going to give them land, and these agents insisted that they instead work for labor contracts between employers and free people in order to give the South a reliable workforce. Such contracts were outlining wages and the kind of work that would be performed. At first, African Americans resisted signing these labor contracts because they wanted to hold out for owning their own land and were afraid of signing themselves back up to their old slave masters. So free people would protest these labor contracts, and some tried to exist on abandoned lands as self-employed families planting crops, hunting, and fishing. Free people also would continue to resist because a labor shortage had developed in the South and it's allowed workers to hold out for the best deal. But in the end, most free people eventually began to work for white employers because they were poor and they needed the work. Additionally, to further ensure that free people were available for the employment of whites, states would pass strict year-long labor contracts so that workers could not change employers for at least a year and created vagrancy laws that punished African Americans with jail time if they did not work for a white person. These laws were called Black Codes, and they were a direct result of the leniency of the Andrew Johnson administration towards the South. These laws only applied to African Americans and were designed to restrict the freedoms of Black people to ensure that they were available as a workforce. These laws did offer some legal rights to former slaves, such as the ability to enter legal contracts. As such, they had the right to marry or acquire personal property. But far more significantly, Black codes limited African Americans' lives. In Mississippi, for example, they passed laws that prohibited African Americans from possessing guns or leasing or renting land in rural areas. Some Black codes also forbade interracial marriages and did allow for some African Americans to be witnesses in court, but they couldn't testify against a white person, and others prohibited African Americans from serving on juries. The wages for free people range from about $10 to $20 a month for men and $8 to $10 for women and children over 12. Workers and employees would argue over wages and the non-payment of wages. The non-payment of wages represented the largest number of complaints to the Freedmen's Bureau. And to get around not paying their workers, planters would use the defense that laborers had bought items at the plantation-owned store and they'd already spent those wages. For example, one freed woman bought a bar of soap for 50 cents at the plantation store. This purchase alone represented 5% of her monthly income. Employers would also deduct from missed work that was sometimes as high as 50 cents to a dollar a day. This rate was often higher than what employees were paid per day. Other disputes developed because employers routinely found trivial ways to dismiss them after the harvest so they could avoid paying the workers. Since they lived where they worked, the planters would then order the laborers off their plantation and the workers would lose their homes as well as their jobs. Other disputes developed over free people's intention to work fewer hours than they had as slaves. They resisted working from sunup to sundown and now began making demands of Saturday as well as Sunday off. Besides working, free people wanted to spend more time with their family and friends, as well as free people also cultivate gardens and sometimes rent small plots of land to raise vegetables or other crops they would sell on their own. So having these few hours or days off provided spare time for such activities. Free people also wanted their children to go to school and not have to work in the fields. All of these disputes caused labor contracts to make way for sharecropping. Sharecropping meant less direction from white overseers and allowed for women to balance their time between working the fields and doing their own family domestic tasks. Under sharecropping, freedmen could make choices of how they wanted to use their family's resources and labor, and free people also tried to arrange their field work so that their children could attend school. And of course, planters opposed any changes from slavery conditions, but ultimately came to accept the idea of sharecropping. Although sharecropping allowed free people some independence, it had some major drawbacks. Since sharecropping bought all their food, clothing, and other items from the plantation store, they often finished the year indebted or with very little profit. One freedman summed it up saying, "Freedom without giving us a chance to live ourselves, and we still have to depend on Southern white man for work, food, and clothing, and he held us throughout necessity and want in a state of servitude, but little better than slavery." Along with the passage of black codes, labor contracts, and sharecropping, white vigilante groups and secret organizations sprang up throughout the South to terrorize African Americans and keep them from exercising their vision as free people and keep them dependent on whites. The best known of these organizations was the Ku Klux Klan, which formed in Tennessee in 1866. Its early leader of the Klan was Nathan Bedford Forrest, a Confederate soldier and a former slave owner. The Klan and other groups targeted African American men, black landowners, and African Americans who refused to behave in a manner subservient to whites. Well-armed groups like the Klan tried to keep African Americans from voting and killed and drove out African American politicians from their homes and sometimes out of the South completely. The Klan was basically a military force used to serve the interests of the Democratic Party and the full restoration of white supremacy in the South. After Northern voters rejected Andrew Johnson's policies, the violence that followed the congressional election of late 1866, the Republicans in Congress took firm hold of Reconstruction in the South. Congress passed three amendments and laws to aid newly freed people. The 13th Amendment abolished slavery in the United States and was adopted by states in 1865. The 14th Amendment was added to the Constitution in 1868, and it broadened the definition of citizenship to grant equal protection under the Constitution to formerly enslaved people. In February of 1869, Congress also approved the 15th Amendment. It was adopted in 1870, and it granted the right to vote to African-American men. Besides these three amendments, Congress overruled Andrew Johnson's veto to establish the Bureau of Refugees, Freedmen, and Abandoned Lands, also known as the Freedmen's Bureau. The mission is to help free people make the transition from slavery to freedom. The Bureau gave out food to both Southern whites and African Americans if they needed it, and it also provided former slaves with marriages, issuing marriage licenses, and the Bureau also helped negotiate labor contracts between free people and their new employers and settle labor disputes. The Freedmen's Bureau did not always work as it was intended because some employees were overly sympathetic to white employers, and some had some instilled prejudices of African Americans. Also, free people found it hard to take time off to make a claim against the employer. Besides passing legislation to set up the Freedmen's Bureau, Congress also passed the Civil Rights Act of 1866, which overturned discriminatory black codes in Southern states that had been passed in 1865 to limit the rights of African Americans. But by far, the most radical development of Reconstruction was the participation of African Americans in Southern public life after 1867. For the first time, African Americans in the South held office in local and state governments, even became lawmakers in United States Congress. African Americans throughout the country participated in civil rights groups called union leagues. Many of those leagues were racially segregated, but some did include both African Americans and white Republicans working together to oppose former Confederates. Union leagues often supported reform on a local level, such as protesting all-white juries, raising money for schools and churches, and committing to the issues of workers' rights. The league also provided advice when negotiating better wages and even organized strikes in Alabama and South Carolina. To keep mobs of whites from interrupting those meetings, the league often encouraged African-American men to arm themselves because of Ku Klux Klan violence made holding political meetings increasingly difficult. One African-American justice of the peace in Tennessee stated that the Klansman assaulted him because he had the audacity to run against a white man for office. Another attempted murder of an African-American politician in Alabama was justified by whites because, as they called it, was going around instructing, enlightening Negroes on how to act and how to work for their rights and make contracts to get their rights. After 1867, an increasing number of Southern whites turned to violence in response to revolutionary changes during the Radical Reconstruction period. The Ku Klux Klan and other white supremacist organizations targeted local Republican leaders, white and black, and other African Americans who challenged white authority. White supremacy gradually reasserted its hold on the South after the early 1870s, and support of Reconstruction would start to wane. Republicans would slowly become more conservative, and in 1874, the Democratic Party would take control of the House of Representatives for the first time since the Civil War. African Americans would attempt to resist white vigilantism, but resistance to the Klan and other white violence was dangerous because local whites often did not support African Americans' attempts to retaliate against the Klan. Also, armed confrontation with Klan members, other vigilantes, would increase the likelihood that whites would retaliate and spread violence against African Americans. During 1871, the Ku Klux Klan Act was passed, and it gave the federal government the right to use federal courts as well as troops against groups conspiring to keep black people from voting and holding office. The violence declined for a short time period in the South. After a lull during the election of 1872 because of federal interference, violence flared up again. Besides violence aimed to keep African Americans from voting, Southern whites also refused to rent land or give them credit or jobs if they supported the Republican Party. During this time, Northern commitment to Reconstruction would continue to wane. Northern whites wearied of the turmoil of Reconstruction, and many began to believe that peace would only occur if Southern whites, in particular planters, controlled Southern state governments as well as African Americans. After 1872, the federal government would become increasingly unwilling to use federal troops to stop violence against African American voters and lawmakers. In the same year, Congress gave back the right to vote to most Confederate supporters. As a result of Southern whites being able to vote again and the desertion of Southern whites from the Republican Party and the disenfranchisement of African Americans because of violence and other means, more Democrats were elected and took control of state governments in the South. These legislators enacted several methods of keeping blacks from being able to vote, along with moving polling places to white areas and providing fewer ones to where African Americans lived. They also created poll taxes and property qualifications for voting. Poor African Americans who could not afford the poll tax couldn't vote, and as a result, fewer African-American lawmakers were elected, and white officials increasingly barred African-Americans from serving on juries. In 1876, the federal government withdrew its marginal support for Reconstruction. In the presidential election of that year, Democratic candidate Samuel J. Tilden won the popular vote over the Republican nominee Rutherford B. Hayes. But because in some states, particularly in the South, the votes were contested due to both parties declaring victory, Tilden could not gain the needed electoral votes. So in 1877, Congress would work out a compromise that would favor Hayes by one vote. Meanwhile, Republicans and Democratic leaders would formally decide that Southern congressmen would accept Hayes, but they would withdraw federal troops from the South. Such a policy would once again allow white Southerners to disenfranchise Southern African Americans, this time without federal interference. The Compromise of 1877 marked the end of the political failure that was Reconstruction. Thank you. This has been One Mic. I'm your host, Country Boy. If you like this, you love this, please consider donating to our Patreon page. Also, if you want to find more content like this, you can do so at onemichistory.com. Also, please remember to give us 5 stars on Apple Podcasts. Peace.
Okay, round 2. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah. Sorry, we were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.